From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, David Icke joins us. He predicted the world we're in many years ago. Well, another nightmare on Wall Street. The stock market took another nosedive as the American banking system appeared even shakier, and investors worried that the financial crisis seems to be spinning so far out of control that even government rescues can't stop it. The Dow Jones Industrial, which only 2 days earlier had suffered its steepest drop since the days after 9/11, lost another 450 points, about another $700 billion in investments, simply gone. One day after the Federal Reserve stepped in with an emergency loan to keep American International Group, AIG, one of the world's largest insurers, from going under. Wall Street wondered which companies might be the next to falter. Well, Morgan Stanley, which saw its stock plummeting on worries that it may not survive the credit crunch, has held preliminary talks with Wachovia Corporation. These moves come as Morgan Stanley Chief Executive John Mack takes steps to ensure his firm remains one of the survivors of the ongoing credit crisis. And while U.S. officials are fiercely putting out a series of economic fires, with all eyes now focused on the fate of Washington Mutual, according to the New York Post, U.S. banking regulators are actively searching for a candidate to take over the Seattle, Washington-based bank amid fears that it could be the next to be felled by the economic mess. And where does Uncle Sam seem to come up with all the huge sums of money during a financial emergency? The government taps its reserves and borrows if it needs more. And the federal government has pledged eye-popping amounts, more than $600 billion just in the past year now, to bail out or help bail out some of the biggest names in American finance. Now the credit crisis is starting to tax even the Federal Reserve's deep resources. Today, the private central bank took the unprecedented step of asking the Treasury Department to sell debt on behalf of the Fed. The first of these auctions raised $40 billion, and two more to raise an additional $60 are scheduled for Thursday. In a moment, trend analyst Gerald Celente joins us. He predicted this mess some time ago. While we were on the air last night, militants armed with atomic weapons, rocket-propelled grenades, and at least one homicide car bomb attacked the U.S. Embassy in Yemen's capital, killing six Yemeni guards and four civilians. Six of the attackers were also killed in what the U.S. called a failed attempt to storm the compound. A disturbing communication posted in a high-level Arabic language forum is suggesting that some type of terrorist operation is now underway, targeting sites within the United States and Europe. According to the information now developed within the last 24 hours by a deep cover intelligence operative, Islamic terrorists have been dispatched to the U.S. and Europe and may be in place preparing to execute unspecified terrorist attacks within the U.S. and Europe. The story is on Douglas Hagman's HomelandSecurityUS.com website, and he's on with us now. Douglas, thanks for coming on the program.
George, thank you very much for having me.
What do we know about this? Could this be rhetoric? We've seen some of this before on these websites.
Indeed we have. And, you know, the past 7 years, people get tired of hearing the potential threats and the communications that of potential terrorist attacks that never come to fruition. And we have been very careful not to report everything that we see and every piece of information we develop in this particular in this realm. However, a few things have lined up that are rather disturbing. They paint a very disturbing picture about the potential for a terrorist attack inside the United States as well as Europe. And I do believe you mentioned the attack of the U.S. Embassy in Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, and this is concurred by, there's a general concurrence among analysts here within our network, that the attack against the U.S. Embassy in Yemen could be the start of things to come, not just an isolated incident. So we can't look at the news in piecemeal. We have to look at this in the greater picture here. Combined with this one piece of intelligence that we found, and by the way, George, most of the internet forums, the areas where terrorists...
That you monitor.
Exactly. The majority of these forums have been shut down or closed it down, some voluntarily, some just lack the postings. It is eerily reminiscent of a time immediately that preceded the 7/7/2005 bombings of London.
Mm.
Now, when you consider that fact, and on the forums that are active, there are talk of specific visions and dreams that mention places like New York City and Washington, which, again, is reminiscent of a time immediately preceding the London bombings and the other bombings of significance.
Well, I can't tell you, Douglas, how many people have called this program over the last 6 months who are feeling, including me, something very strange and ominous. We just don't know what it is. It could very well be this financial collapse we're all involved in, but this would also be a very bad time for something like an attack to occur, especially with what's going on now. So this information that you continue to pick up and post on your website, Homeland Security U.S., is very valuable. We just need to monitor it. What is law enforcement, and what are the feds doing about this?
Interestingly, the law enforcement are beginning to look at patterns. They're very concerned about the pattern that has been developed by especially one deep cover operative that is very active in monitoring this. They're taking this threat as well as others very seriously. And you mentioned the economic dire straits that we're in. This has not been lost on the terrorists. There is a lot of talk about the fact that what better time to bring the great Satan, meaning us, to our knees further by attacking when we are weak financially. And there's discussion, you know, wouldn't it be a horrific thing in our minds, but a glorious thing in their minds, to strike soft targets like shopping centers and areas of large body counts where it would cause people to stay inside and stop spending money to further exacerbate our economic problems. This, what we're seeing now is a higher evolution of the thought process of terrorists, and they're watching our economy, our politics very closely.
All right, Douglas, thanks. We're going to continue to monitor this through you. The House, by the way, has moved to compel the nation's capital to broaden the rights of its residents to buy and own firearms, including semi-automatic weapons. The National Rifle Association-backed bill passed easily, with supporters saying that they were determined to give D.C. residents the same Second Amendment right of self-defense that's been available to other Americans. Hackers broke into the Yahoo email account that Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin used for official business as Alaska's governor, revealing as evidence a few personal messages that she has received since John McCain selected her as his running mate. The McCain campaign is shocked with this invasion of the governor's privacy. One point, though, I don't think that states should be using outside email sources like that, the Yahoo, for example, for their statewide email. It's very easy to hack into things like that. The 31-year-old April Pinkard of Live Oak, Florida. The old saying says, follow your heart, has a new meaning with her after a rare medical condition caused her heart to move to the other side of her chest. Listen to this. Her doctor discovered her condition when he couldn't find a heartbeat. He listened all over the place. He couldn't find it. Well, they found out that under a full examination, her heart had floated into an empty space in her body, the result of having a diseased lung removed as a young child. And listen to this incredible story. You might remember last week that tragedy here in Los Angeles, the commuter train smashing into the passenger train and killed 25 people. Listen to the story. As Chuck Peck's family waited, holding out hope that he was alive in the wreckage of the Metrolink train crash near Chatsworth, their phones rang. You look at the phone, and it's Dad, said Peck's son, CJ. He can't be dead. Well, for most of Friday night into Saturday morning, as firefighters worked to rescue survivors of the Metrolink train crash and recover the bodies of those who died, the former resident's cellular phone kept calling his son, his brother, his stepmother, his sister, his fiancée. Peck's family members received about 35 calls from Peck's cell phone through the night. No one said anything on the other end. All they heard was static and just strange sounds. Peck's sister Barbara Lopez said, "We had no idea that he had already died." Peck's brother Richard, also of the area, said he dialed back repeatedly but only received Peck's voicemail. The CJ The Sun said he hoped his dad was listening on the other end, even if he was stuck under the wreckage. "We love you," CJ shouted on the phone. "Hang in there. We're coming to get you." Even firefighters became hopeful as Peck's fiancée, Andrea Katz, received a call as she waited for word at a high school. Seeking Peck's caller ID on her phone and seeing it there, they searched the first train car looking for any sign that Peck was alive. Family members, meanwhile, called hospitals. Maybe they figured he was somewhere else. Maybe alive. They called 911 and the fire department to tell anyone that he might be somewhere in need of help. The call stopped coming in at 3:28 a.m. Firefighters recovered Peck's body about an hour later. Coroners told Peck's family that he was killed instantly. His body showed no sign that he lived even for a short time after the crash. No one can explain why his cell phone dialed his loved ones. Incredible story. In a moment, Gerald Celente joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here he is, trends analyst Gerald Celente. Boy, Gerald, I'm glad you're not one of those "I told you so" guys. Unbelievable.
Yes, it is, George. It is believable, and the worst is yet to come, unfortunately.
You still think it's going to get even worse? How can it, Gerald?
Well, the way it's going to get worse is that there are going to be many other too big to fails. We're just looking right now at a couple of companies in the financial sector that are going under. We're going to see giant retailers. We're going to see banks. We're going to see consumer product companies. We're going to see also the next shoe to drop, the economic shoe to drop, is going to be in the commercial real estate sector. No one's talking about that. And that's going to be much bigger than the home mortgage sector. I mean, remember, when these developers build these massive shopping malls and office complexes and condominium complexes, you know, they're way bigger than, you know, the losses that are going to start that have happened from the subprime problem. As we have long said, the subprime problem is only the crack at the economic foundation. There's much more to come. These leveraged buyout firms, you know, that bought multi-billion dollar companies with virtually no money down. You know, and they bought these on the expectations of future earnings. You know, we're looking at a meltdown the likes of which people have never seen before.
Worse than the Great Depression?
Worse than the Great Depression, and I'll give you a couple of reasons why. When we saw the Great Depression, most people didn't own homes. There was certainly no such thing as a home equity loan. Matter of fact, in those days, if you got a second mortgage, you were a loser. Back then, people didn't have credit cards. The consumer wasn't $14 trillion in debt. And the government was in $10 trillion in debt. Of course, now that they've put the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac on the books, you know, it's ostensibly $15 trillion in debt. We had trade surpluses, not trade deficits as we have now. We had budget surpluses, not budget deficits. Back then, we weren't fighting two wars that have already cost us $2 trillion. Back then, we had a manufacturing base in place.
That's right.
So that when we did get out of the Depression with World War II and following, we had an economy that could take that strength and move forward. No, George, we're going into this slowdown in much worse shape. We are in the beginning of a greatest depression. It's going to be worse, we're forecasting, than the last one.
It seems like the bleeding, Gerald, is everywhere. You stop a little thing and it just starts bleeding and spurting out some other area of the body.
Stopping it by printing more money. I mean, that's the only thing the Federal Reserve has done. They keep bailing out, buying out, and rescuing these private companies.
Now, let me ask you, Gerald, what would happen if they just let these companies die?
What would happen is that they would die. What happened after Lehman died? Didn't do anything. It was, you know, it was part of the collapse that's going to happen. There's going to be pain when you have excessive greed, corruption, fraud, and that's what these companies are built upon. This is what happens. Unfortunately, a lot of people are also getting hurt. All these investors that are seeing their IRAs, their pension funds, people with mutual funds, you know, these things are unraveling. And this is important, George. You know, you mentioned, you know, what would happen. You know, this AIG bailout, the American International Group. I mean, it's a private company. And you know what they say? Now the government owns ostensibly 80% of AIG. Well, in the old days, they would call that communism, when the government owns major companies.
That's right.
And that's what it is. We have become the USSA, the United Soviet States of America. The government is owning the biggest companies, and, you know, they talk about socialism. This is socialism, but they don't give the money to the little people. They only give it to the big people.
Exactly. A friend of mine called me today, Gerald, and said, hey, who's going to bail me out of my credit card debt, my mortgage, my car payment? They're bailing out these big corporations with our money. Why don't they help me out? You know, what do you say to a guy like that?
You tell them what I said. This is the communist state. It's the big companies aren't part of the government. We can see it before our eyes. There's no charade here. It's right there every day. And, you know, this is, you know, it's a Titanic analogy. When the Titanic went under, what did they do? They save the rich. They're the ones that got the lifeboats. The steerage, the lower class, the everyday people, they went down with the ship.
And in some cases, they didn't even open up the gates.
That's right. They locked them in. It's Katrina quality rescue. The little people drowned. I cannot believe there's going to be... George, this is just the beginning. We're going to see an unraveling that people are still denying it. They're still denying
exactly
what's going on.
That is the $64,000 answer, Gerald. People are denying that Rome is burning.
I know, and it's right in front of us. We just saw Lehman Brothers. It's the biggest bankruptcy in history. We saw that little two-bit company that most people never heard of, IndyMac, that bank that went bust a few months ago. That was the second largest bank failure in history, and that was a tiny one. Now we're looking at Wachovia, Washington Mutual. There's not enough money to bail them out, and they can't get those printing presses going quick enough. Look what happened to gold yesterday. It went up, what, $90 at one point?
$90 just exploded, and it's going to keep going, as you predicted. Look, you know what's going to happen, too? The Chinese are going to begin to buy these companies. The folks in Abu Dhabi are going to begin to buy these companies. We are going to be owned lock, stock, and barrel by foreigners, not just these quiet investments of let's buy the Chrysler building or let's lease some of your ports. They're going to own everything.
Well, they own, you know, we're seeing the American labels going by the wayside. Look what happened with Budweiser.
Isn't this a nice way to get a one world government going and going fast?
Again, look what they're doing. The government now owns, you know, AIG, the largest company, the insurance company, one of the largest ones in America. And by the way, you know, they keep using this term, and no one's speaking about this, too big to fail. How did they get too big to fail? Because of their predatory practices of gobbling up the competition, putting everybody else out of business, and the only way they could have done this with no antitrust laws in place anymore, because the mafia, the Democrats and the Republicans, took those antitrust out of place so this could happen.
Well, we're not done, Gerald. We'll be talking to you very soon because, as you've just said, this isn't going away. Now, before we all jump off a bridge, I'm going to change gears just a little bit. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. It's Debbie Reynolds, singer, actress. She was born in El Paso, Texas at the age of 16, won a motion picture contract with Warner Brothers. And Debbie went on to regularly appear in movie musicals, most notably Singing in the Rain. She chalked up several hit records, including Tammy. In November of 2006, she received a Lifetime Achievement Award from Chapman University. And she makes appearances, film, television, is one of the few actors still with MGM's Golden Age of Film. She's here. There's a reason she's here on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Hi, George. How are you? I didn't leave Texas at 16. I left at 7. And I was raised in Burbank, California.
You're a California girl now.
Yeah. Well, I would think so after all these years. How are you, George?
I'm doing great. You know, and that song brings back great memories. I mean, it is still one of the best.
Thing. Really, it's a pretty sweet song.
Hey, Debbie, you're doing an event, which I want to mention here real quickly and then talk about your incredible career. You're all honoring Clint Eastwood by mm-hmm. the Thalians. That's Cedars-Sinai mental health support group that you help create with the Ruta Lee, right?
Yes, it's this is our 53rd year, and I did it for like 20 years, and then I was lucky enough to find Ruta Lee, and we've been doing it 53 years for mental health, and we have a great clinic, unbelievable, for mental health at Cedars-Sinai. And we're giving our big ball November 2nd, honoring Clint Eastwood, and of course we're going to have unbelievable show, George Lopez and Frida Plain, you know, Payne. Mm-hmm. And the Frank Capp Orchestra. It's all about jazz. Well, it's all about Clint. It's whatever Clint likes, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do a great show.
Your previous honorees were Roger Moore, Sally Field, Liza Minnelli, Mary Tyler Moore, Shirley MacLaine. The list just goes on and on. Whoopi Goldberg.
Well, Frank Sinatra before that, you know, it goes back so many years that we were very lucky that everybody was very charitable, and Jack Benny, George Burns. So all the years, everybody's worked really hard to have this charity continue on, and we do great mental research.
You know, all your life, Debbie, you've been involved in entertainment. You've made people laugh. You've made people cry.
They've laughed at me. I don't know which.
It is. These are tough times for a lot of people now. As you look at things today and you know, look back to the days when you were doing Singing in the Rain during the 50s and then all the programs, mm-hmm. have you seen a mood change in this country? Because I think we're in a tough spot right now.
Well, of course the country is, but we were always in a tough spot. I think being America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, we seem to want to take care of the world. And we really have. And now we just got into trouble because somehow we elected the wrong people. And I just think we're in a lot of chaos because of wrong legislative decisions. And I'm not political. I don't get into it because I always I always resent, you know, when people say, well, why don't show people just shut up? And I think they're right. Because I'd far rather entertain you. But today, every American, we have to be so aware of being up on
everything,
what's happening.
Yeah.
And we just can't say, hey, I don't want to talk about it, let my neighbors handle it, because our neighbors are our family, and our we're all together, and the world has grown bigger because in my day we had the radio. We didn't have television.
Right.
And so it's a whole different world. And now, of course, with computers and it's very hard. My brother and I were talking today, and my brother is 77, and he said, you know, sis, I just don't feel like I fit. I don't feel like I fit anymore, and I don't feel like I can help anymore, and I just feel left out. I said, well, to my brother, I said, you know, we can't feel like that because we are the elders and we have to stay in there and we have to fight hard for the respect and for the old values because a lot of the new values are wrong and misused. And I don't say wrong, but misused. So I'm going to stay yelling, and I'm going to stay fighting to the end of my day. And I think it's very important that old people shouldn't feel left out. We cut ourselves out because we give up. We don't understand certain things. Well, it's simply because we're not reading, and we're not staying up with things, and we have to. This is the most crucial time for the whole world. Everything has been. I was there with Reagan. I was there. I met President Truman, Eisenhower. So
you've seen it all, Debbie.
I'm not a baby.
You've seen it all.
I love my country. And I went to Korea 5 times. And I was shot down over Korea. And, you know, my brother was in Korea. And so I love my country, and I want to stay in there and fight and be aware of what's going on and stay a part of it. And it is hard right now to know what to do because it seems so that the financial institutions have so gone crazy.
Yeah, I think greed got to all. Hey, Debbie, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break, then we're going to come right back and take phone calls from all around the country. We're talking with Debbie Reynolds. We'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Debbie Reynolds. We're going to take your calls. Debbie, Hollywood has changed dramatically
in the world.
Oh, it has. I mean, I remember when you had an Oscar nomination for the unsinkable Molly Brown.
Julie Andrews got the Oscar that time with
her musical Mary Poppins. Hollywood doesn't do that anymore. I when was the last time there was truly a musical other than maybe Moulin Rouge with Nicole Kidman? Remember that?
First of all, they don't make musicals anymore,
no.
So there's no problem. My daughter always says, well, it was a very layered performance, Mother. So she, you know, I don't think they make musicals, as you well know. They don't. Chicago and, you know, as you say, Moulin Rouge. But they don't, you know, people love. I'm on the road 42 weeks a year. I travel. I go everywhere. I do an act, and I work civic houses and entertain people. And they love music, and they love happy time, an enjoyable evening. They don't want to hear, unless they're going to go to a political meeting, but that's something else. But usually people are going out to see a play, a show, you know, have a good time. So I think that they really miss musicals. I sincerely do. But, you know, it's up to the producers. And today the studio system is ended, and so it's a different world.
Let's go around the country here, Debbie. We've got Peggy in Prescott, Arizona. You're on the line with Debbie Reynolds on Coast to Coast. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, George.
Go ahead. Take it away.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Peggy.
How are you?
Great.
Wonderful. I took my aunt and my mother to see you about 4 years ago in Laughlin, and we loved the show.
Thank you.
Oh, you're such an inspiration.
I work Laughlin every year. I'll be going back in the next month. I'll be back there.
Oh, well, I'll be there to see you again.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a picture of you and my aunt and my mother, and boy, I was really adamant about getting that picture. But it's lovely, and it's sitting right here on my dresser here.
Well, thank you. We're just, George and I are just talking about how people enjoy music, and isn't that why you would come and see me?
I love it. Debbie, don't you get tired traveling around as much as you do?
Oh, sure. I hate it. Oh, my God. Can you imagine airports? Oh, Lord.
Oh, nowadays, it's a mess.
Oh, it's so hard. It's the one thing that would end my career is simply the travel. It's not you want to go, you want to be with people, and you want to entertain. Traveling is so hard, and everybody knows that that's listening. But it's just part of the way the world is today. In order to get somewhere, what are we going to go, by covered wagon?
What's been your very favorite role in your career?
Well, the unsinkable Molly Brown, but the most, I'd say, popular, of course, through the years is Singing in the Rain.
One of the best. One of the best.
Well, it's just a wonderful movie and still is, and Rent's all the time. You know, young people love it when they see it. They laugh because it's the story was just so open-minded. It was just a really fun story. And How the West Was Won was a great movie also.
The rain scene with Gene Kelly, what do they have, machines in the background?
Oh, no, it was an overhang, you know, in other words, like a tarp and sprinklers overhead. And Gene had a really bad cold, but that's how it was done. It was all enclosed and sprinklers, and so it was as if the sky opened. They created their own sky.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, good evening.
It's Molly Brown.
That's right. I'm still here.
Huge fan since I was a little kid. That was my favorite film of yours.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, of course, your daughter, Carrie, and what a wonderful family.
Thank you.
And I thank you for all your wonderful work. And I wanted to know two questions. Are you going to do another film, possibly like a Will and Grace type reunion film?
Well, I wish if somebody writes it.
Well, talk to the producers.
I don't think that I would be good in Sex and the City. I really don't think that Debbie fits Sex and the City. Will and Grace, I thought I was kind of really okay there, you know, and because I wasn't a star and the kids are so great, you know. Of course, I would love to be a part of any show like that. I'm not doing a show. I'm not doing television. I don't have anything in mind, and I'm on the road all the time. I'm, you know, traveling all the time in a new show called Simply Ballroom, because everything seems to be ballroom dancing now, and so I'm doing that right now.
What do you think of American Idol, shows like that nowadays, Deb?
Well, that's what I'm telling you. The people want to see dancing. They want to see fun. They want to see people make fools of themselves.
Some pretty talented singers come out of that, though, huh? What do you think?
Yes, of course. There's talent everywhere. Oh, my gosh. What does it end with? A generation? No.
No,
every
that's
generation
true.
Has a talent, and if they have a springboard, that they can make it. That's how I made it. I was nothing. I was a young kid with talent. It was latent talent, and I had no training. And so I just got a great break, and that's all you need is a break.
That one shot. Was there one person responsible for your career when you look back that say, this person helped me more than anyone, and this is this help catapult me?
Well, the talent scout that discovered me at Burbank, California, I entered a contest, and there were two talent scouts there, and they took me and did screen tests of me, and that started my career, and meaning they put me in films right away, and, you know, that won't happen today. That's a very lucky break. So the break today is television.
Yeah.
It is through the ballroom stuff. So go everywhere. Go try, audition, just make a fool of yourself, because you can always go on, you know, and, you know, failure only leads to success.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Karen. You're on with Debbie Reynolds. Go ahead.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Debbie.
Good evening.
I wanted to call and thank you. My grandmother and my mother introduced me to Molly Brown, Singing in the Rain, all of the great ones when I was a child.
Oh, good for them.
Absolutely. Loved the movies. It was always something very special we shared with each other. And lost my mother just a couple of months after having twins, and my grandmother had preceded her in death by 2 years. And my three children now are huge fans and just got a kick out of, after seeing you in the classics, seeing you in Halloween Town.
Yes, that's interesting. I did that for Disney, Halloween Town, and that's for children like up to 13. I did it because I really felt it was important to do movies that were clean and fun for children under 12 or 13. And this part came up called Grandma Aggie
Cromwell,
and I thought it was really a kick. You know, it was Halloween and fun, and I loved doing it, and I would do more. I loved it.
Dawn in Salem, Oregon, you're up with us. Dawn, go ahead.
Well, I'm about to pass out. Hi, Miss Reynolds.
Hi.
Oh my goodness, this is a pleasure. Debbie, I just want to ask you a couple of questions. What is your favorite movie that you're in? And the second one is, you and June Allison are I'm 54, but you are my top-notch actresses of all time.
Well, that's so sweet of you. I love Junie. She was a great friend. She's the sweetest thing in the whole world. And she was the littlest thing in the whole world. She was like 5 feet tall, and well, really 5'1", and I'm 5'1½", you know. And she was my father's favorite, June Allison, too.
Oh wow!
And she just passed on just 2 years now, and I really miss her. She was a great girl, a wonderful actress. And I'm glad you loved her, because I loved her, too.
Yeah, I think her and Jimmy Stewart, they were like two peas in a pod.
Oh, well, thanks very much.
Great.
He was the greatest.
He was. Hey, Debbie, I want to thank you. And again, great event coming up for you November 2nd. I'll mention this again as you get
you.
Close
November
to
2nd,
it.
Clint Eastwood. And if anybody wants to send donations, it's www. The Thalians. It's mental health. And, you know, people that suffer a great deal can't really be helped, but we can help them at the Thalian Clinic because we've been doing this 50 years. We've been working really hard. So anyone out there that wants to come to the ball, which is November 2nd, the tickets are really expensive, of course, as they should be, because all the great stars are there.
Let me tell you something, Debbie. You are as gracious on the phone as you've been on the screen and television, and thank you so much for being part of this Coast to Coast family. I'll be back in a moment. David Icke is next.